Hola, hello, good evening. What's happening? This is Larry Goins. How is everybody doing?
Hola, ¿cómo está?
Hey, Larry, how are you?
What's happening? We got a lot of people on the line tonight. How is everybody?
Interesting.
Great.
Busy.
That's awesome. Busy is a good thing.
Yes, it is.
Excellent. I've talked to a few students. Good. Welcome to the call.
Hey, Larry. Thanks.
Hey. So I know it is straight up 9 o'clock. People stagger in and out. Well, I've got 9:02 on my phone now. But people come in and off throughout the evening. So I want to first say, if you're brand new, or if you're a brand new Inner Circle member, welcome to the call. These are our biweekly Q&A calls where you get as much time with me as you need. And I will be on here until no one has any more questions. It might be 15 minutes. It might be 2.5 hours. It just really depends on you guys. And I'm here to answer any and all of your questions. If you have deals you're working on, tell me about them. You know, if you have questions about your deal, if you have a challenge, if you have a problem, if you have a question, concern, anything about what to do and how to do it, I am here to answer your question to the best of my ability. So having said that, I do want to jump right in and make sure everybody gets your question answered. So, and what I usually do is I'll leave the line open, and we'll just be respectful of each other. And if somebody jumps in with a question, just hold back and, you know, try to only ask one, maybe two max at a time. And that way everybody can get a chance. So let's just jump right in. Who wants to be first?
Oh, heck, I'll go first. This is Gary in Asheville.
Gary, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
I'm good. How about I go first and get all my nerves out of the way, and then I can relax and enjoy the rest of the evening? So I'm closing on 3 houses tomorrow.
Woohoo! Everybody say, yay, Gary, go for it.
Yeah, and I've got a plan on them, too. I was trying to get them assigned, but that didn't work out. But my plan at this point is to, as soon as I get them closed, we're supposed to close today, but my attorney is flicking out on me, which sometimes happens. And so as soon as I get them closed, they're going to go back on the market through eBay and Craigslist and all those different sources. I'm going to put up a bunch of bandit signs around them. They're all in Shelby, North Carolina, about a block and a half from each other, so the bandit signs will look like a party in that area.
Good. Go put them out all over the neighborhood, on that side of town, everywhere. You said it's in Shelby?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like Shelby. I have a house I don't have a house. I have some notes in Shelby right now, but I don't have houses.
Well, that's part of my plan. I'm going to have some notes in Shelby, too, but I'm going to get rid of them.
Because
right now it's about the cash flow. So I just want to run this plan by you, and I think it's good, but I just want to run this by you if that's okay with you.
Sure.
Okay. All right, so they're going to go on Craigslist, they're going to go on eBay, they're going to go in the classified section and a couple of little local papers around the area. And then, of course, the bandit signs are going up. And I bought these 3 properties. I paid $11.5 for each of them.
Good for you.
And the ARVs top-down go from about 62 to about 59 on the three of them. And so they're good there, but I'm gonna sell them with owner financing, and I'm gonna be asking a $5,000 down on them, and I'm gonna sell them for $19,900.
You're gonna sell them for $19,900 each.
Right, $19,900 each. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now they're worth. Yeah. You said they were worth 60 something. Is that combined or each?
Each.
Okay.
Yeah.
So wait a minute. So you're buying them for $11.5 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have $34.5 in all three of them.
That's correct.
So $11.5 each, and you're going to sell each of them for how much each?
I'm thinking about asking $19.9 for them.
Why would you ask $19.9 if you're seller financing and they're worth $65 each or $60?
Well, one of the reasons is that they require work. They require a lot of work. The big one requires about 24,000, and the two other ones, one requires about 17, one requires about 15. You think I should ask more for them?
Well, I personally would. I mean, if you're paying $11,500, you're mm-hmm. not even asking twice of what you have in them with owner
That's
property.
True. Right. And the reason my thinking was is that I really want to get them gone because I want to turn the cash around. And also, and then I would hold on to the notes with a $5,000 down. That would be enough cash to continue on with comfort. And then I would hold the notes for 6 months and sell a partial after 6 months worth for a season. And I would get about, between the down and the notes being sold as partials, I would make about $17,500 on each of the properties.
Okay, so how much could you sell that $14,000 note for?
Well, I ran the numbers on Analyzer.
And how much could you sell that note for?
Let me look and see. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back to Analyzer. I don't remember it off the top of my head.
Well, I don't think you could.
No. Yeah, I'd sell the note. I could sell the note for about 12, I think.
12?
Okay. Well, that's what.
Okay, so 12 plus 5 down, okay?
17.5, yeah.
12 plus 5 down is 17.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but you're gonna have 65 in it. So
you're gonna make
$11,000 in it, right?
Yes, on each one of them.
Okay. Well, here's my thought. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Here's my thought, and I think it's a great plan. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a great plan. However, You're talking about a 6 month time frame to make $11,000 on one house.
Well, yeah, true, yes.
So if the house is really worth 65, and it really needs like each one of them, like one needs 20 in work, one needs 12, one needs 15 or 17 or whatever
mm-hmm.
it was.
Sure.
Why can't you just put it right back on the market and sell each one of them for $20,000 cash and move on?
Well, I could try that, but I think that the seller financing is what makes it attractive.
Well, it does make it attractive, but, I mean, think about it. You're selling it for $19,900 anyway with seller financing.
Mm-hmm.
It does, but here's the thing. If a house needs $20,000 in work,
mm-hmm.
that's not the kind of house that somebody who can't get a bank loan and only has $5,000 to put down
I understand that. Yes. Right.
So
yeah.
if you take their $5,000, what are they going to do to rehab the house?
Right. Yeah. I know. I thought about that, and I thought
you
that there was
sell it to a landlord
mm-hmm.
or an investor. That now I'm a firm believer that you know to fix and flip a house, you typically need to be fixing and flipping a house that's
right.
over $100,000, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's hard to get a loan on a $65,000. It's hard to find somebody
yeah.
who can get a loan. But if you're selling
right.
it to a landlord or somebody who's going to fix it up and sell or finance it or whatever. So my personal opinion is if they need that much work, it's not the kind of property you're going to sell to an owner-occupant that's going to live
there. I agree.
Because it's going to be overwhelming to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense, and I didn't really think that was going to be my buyer, but I thought I'd put it out there for them anyway.
So
but I would be
if I were you, I mean, you're selling
yeah.
it for 19 with seller financing. Why don't you
mm-hmm.
just turn around and offer it for 19 cash?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you could say 29.9 with owner financing, $10,000 discount for cash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, that's a good idea.
You know, that's what I would probably do.
Okay.
To me, that's way too little money to make for having to go through this three-step process of buy it, sell it, sell the note to only make $11,000 per deal.
Yeah, gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just my personal opinion.
Okay, great. Thank you. I appreciate that. That helps.
You're very, very welcome. I hope that helped.
Yeah, me too.
great. Who else has a question?
I have a quick comment. This is Christian.
Hey, Christian. How are you, sir?
Feeling a little bit better here. We had some rain finally in Boston here.
Oh, good.
It's good to hear your voice. I'm glad you're on the call tonight.
Hey, thank you. One suggestion. What is the gentleman that was just speaking here?
Yeah, he's from Asheville.
Nashville. Okay, yeah, I forgot his name. But,
Asheville in the Carolinas.
All right. One suggestion here in Massachusetts or in the market that I'm looking at, contractors don't have time to prospect. You have the expertise of prospecting, and I have a contractor I'm getting. We're setting up an LLC together. He has all the knowledge for fixing. If you have the leads knowledge, if you can associate yourself with a local contractor, you can flip those properties. But if in the meantime cash flow is important, one of the ways that I have found gives you a lot of contractors local, Chamber of Commerce or Contractors Association of all kind, you can contact some of these people and wholesale your property to them, because those guys, for you look at a property maybe $20,000 to fix. For them, it may be only $10,000, $12,000 because they buy material at cost and they can go on a weekend or whatever. So they don't have time to prospect, so that could be a way to wholesale your property still, as Larry said, maybe at 29 or 27.
Now, when you said contractors are good buyers, are you talking about
wholesale
the person
buyer
who is actually the contractor and going to do the work, or an investor that does fix and flips?
No, I meant someone you can wholesale the properties to, because at least in my area here, the prices are completely different from where
right,
where,
but you're not talking about somebody who is a licensed general contractor, are you?
No. For instance, the person that I'm creating an LLC with is a plasterer. Irish guy. He knows everybody in the trade, and he said,
so he is a contractor.
Yeah, he's a contractor. His specialty is being a plasterer,
Christian.
But he's been looking for properties forever.
Christian,
where he can come in
ever
and
done
fix them, because it's less
flip.
Headache and more money for him than to manage his crew, the crews that he has
right.
on the market all the time. So at least in my case, this guy was looking for someone that could bring leads to him of properties that need fixing, not just for plaster, but for other things, because he has all the contact, and he has someone, actually his wife, that would act as a general contractor. She's handling all of his project while
okay.
he keeps he's there
so
on the
Christian.
Road to look for more projects. So that
so
was
Christian.
A suggestion maybe that could work for him.
So, Christian, when you say they need somebody to bring leads to them, are you talking about for jobs to keep them busy or for houses to fix and flip?
In my case, for houses to fix and flip.
Okay. Now, let me help you out here a little bit, okay, Christian?
Yeah.
Has your plaster guy that you're creating an LLC with ever done a fix and flip?
He's one, the house that he's living in now.
Okay. So here's my concern, okay, Christian?
Okay.
You're going all in with this guy. You're creating an LLC with somebody. How long have you known him, by the way?
7 years.
Okay. Well, the good news is you've known him a long time, okay? That's the good news, all right? But if he's never done a fix and flip before, you know, there's a lot of things that if you guys create an LLC together and you're both 50% owners, who's going to decide the quality of material, the quality of labor, whether you do replace countertops, you don't replace countertops, whether you paint it blue or red, whether you list it with the realtor, whether you offer a seller's bonus or not, whether you take a discount or not, whether you offer to pay the buyer's closing cost. There's a lot of variables when you go into LLC and you're 50-50 partners that you guys have to work out. And if you haven't done fix and flips before and you're just getting started as well, I know you've done some stuff in the past, but you're just getting started as well, I would be very, 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 very careful about creating an LLC, you know, on your very first one. What I typically
okay.
would like to do is I would make one person the lender and one person, you know, like each person does their own thing. You know, like one person could be the money person, one person be the sweat equity person, whereas you would be the money person, they would be the sweat equity person, and you could work it that way. And if it works out good, you like each other at the end of the deal, after you sell it, then maybe create an LLC. That's
okay.
just my own personal opinion. So just be very, very careful. The good news is you've known this guy a long time, so you have a relationship there, I'm assuming.
Yeah, he was a tenant of mine for some years.
Okay.
Okay, so I see. So we okay. So how do we operate that then? One person is a lender, one is a sweat equity, but we do not do that within an LLC.
Well, you could do. Well, they could be your LLC. Okay.
Oh.
You could buy the property, and you could even say you could write up a contract that says, okay, this property needs X, 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 X work. You do that work, and you pay it out of your pocket, and then when the house sells, instead of just paying you for the job, I'll pay you X percentage of the profits left over.
Okay, and I can do that. I already have an LLC set up like this.
There
for
you
that.
Go.
Okay, thank you for the – well, I'm glad I made my comment.
and I'm glad you called in tonight. That's good. That's good. All right, cool.
Okay.
I hope that helped. I know you didn't really have a question. It was just a comment, but I wanted to help you while you were on here.
Well, no, absolutely. That's the kind of feedback that I need. I'm still a very young guy in the
good.
Real estate environment here.
Good, good. Great. Who's next with a question?
Hey, Larry. This is Patty from Asheville.
Patty, what's happening?
Hey, I got a house under contract down in South Carolina, and I want to run a scenario by you.
Stay out of my neighborhoods.
It's out of your neighborhood. okay, so it's a Fannie Mae, and we're moving forward with it. Needs a little bit of work, but we have buyers that are really interested in it because they have family that lives on the same street. However, they own a home in another town, which they are getting ready to sell. So our scenario is to...
These are your buyers, you said?
Yes. Yes. They want this house very, very much.
Now, are you financing it, or are they paying either cash
well,
or their own money?
What our scenario is because they do own a house that they want to sell, so we were thinking of doing a lease option with them, since it's a Fannie Mae anyway, and getting them in there while they're, selling their house, and then they want to put down about 80% of what they sell their house for, in a owner finance.
Right. Okay. So, how much are you selling them the house for?
About 74.
And how much are you buying it for?
42.
And what are you doing to the house? Anything?
Yeah, it needs a new HVAC and a well pump.
Okay, so you're putting probably about another $7,500 in it, or five or six?
Yeah, probably about
$6,000 to $7,000. Okay. All right, so you're going to have about 47 in it, 48 after closing costs, something like that.
Right.
And you're selling it for 75, you said?
Yeah, 74.
74, okay. 60, 74, so you're making about 25 on it. But you're going to do a lease option with them until their house sells.
Right.
So do you know if they're a qualified buyer? In other words, will they be able to go get a loan?
I'm assuming they will.
Well,
I'm assuming they will, but, yes, I have to check that out.
How are you paying for the house?
Cash.
Okay. You have your own cash money, right?
Yes.
Are you okay having your money tied up until they can sell their house and go get a loan and exercise their option?
Yes.
Okay. And, all right. So are you okay if they're not able to exercise their option and they just keep renting it?
Yeah, I would be okay with that.
Okay. All right, good. So, yeah, I'm just trying to, find out all the answers before I kind of give you my advice on what I would do.
Okay. Right.
So how much are they in a position to be able to put down as a lease option?
Probably about $5,000.
$5,000, okay. How long are you going to do your option agreement and your lease agreement for?
6 months.
6 months. Okay. I think I would be happy with that deal. If they're paying $74 for it and they put $5 down, then I would be happy with that. What are they paying you as far as rent?
Well, that's they're a little tight because, you know, they have their other house. So while they're renting, they want it to be 500.
Uh-huh. And what's market rent?
Market rent is probably about 650.
Okay. So that's another $150 a month.
Right.
Okay. Are you okay with the 500?
It's a little tight, but we'll make a little bit of money, about 150.
Yeah, okay. So if you're happy with it, I would do that. If you're happy with it,
it's
okay keeping the money in there. But I would put something in the option that says, or in the lease agreement that says, well, first of all, here's what I would do. I would say, how long do you think it's going to take your house to sell? Have they told you the answer to that?
No.
Okay. I would ask them, how long do you think it's going to take your house to sell? If they say 3 months, say, okay, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll make your rent $500 a month for the first 3 months. After that, it's $650.
Okay. Okay.
That
Great.
Way, you're basing it on what they told you. And they can't.
Right.
I could say, well, what if it doesn't sell? Well, you're the one that told me it could sell in 3 months. Right?
Right, right. Okay,
go.
Cool.
But I wouldn't take less than 5,000 down.
Right. Yeah, Nathan already told us.
Do what?
Nathan already told us that.
Good, good, good.
Because yeah, they originally wanted to put 3 down. So, you know, he said, no, move that up.
I did one today with $3,000 down. Well, I should say Alyssa did one today, and we got $3,000 down. But I only had $21,000 in the house, so
right.
So I took $3,000 down, but the sell price was $59,900 on the the option price.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. So did that help?
Yeah, very much.
Good. 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 Okay. Who's next? Who else got a question?
This is Adam from Asheville.
Adam, what's up?
Hey, Larry.
Hey, have you made any offers today?
I'm waiting for that one to come back that I did last week.
Last week? Man, that's history.
I know. You're right.
I'm sorry, man. I'm shaming you here in front of everybody. But, hey, you got to make some offers. What did I tell you in the last email you sent me?
I said make 5
offers
a day.
Make more offers, right?
Yes.
There you go. All right, buddy, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to give you a hard time. What kind of question do you got?
It's a comment on the previous Patty's question, on
okay.
Patty's deal. What is the it's a lease option, so what is the actual amount that they're going to pay for the options?
That's $5,000 is the option consideration. $5,000 is the option consideration. And so there is no rent deposit. And option consideration gives them the right to buy, but not the obligation to buy. So if the option price is $74,000 and they give her a $5,000 option fee, that means that during the next 6 months, they can exercise their option and get their own financing and buy the house for $74,000. But if they don't and the option expires, she does not have to give them their option money back.
Well, that was where my question was going, actually. It sounds like there's a zero down payment, and $5,000 of that is for the option. So is it typical to do it that way? You typically have a payment as a down payment plus a payment for the option payment.
Okay. I think you're thinking that she's seller financing it. She's not. She's renting it to them. It's called a lease with an option. She's renting it to them for 6 months to give them time to sell their current house. And once they sell their current house and cash out, then they could either get a loan and pay her off, or then she could sell or finance it to them at that point.
Okay, that makes sense.
cool.
Is that right, Patty?
Yes, that's correct.
Good. And you said at that point they're giving you 80% of what they're cashing out on their...
Right, and, you know, it depends on if they want to go with, you know, a bank loan or they want to go with us because we could, we could own or finance it and probably do real well with that.
Exactly, especially if they put a good considerable amount down.
Right, right.
There you go. Good, good. Did that help, Adam?
Yep, that did. Thank you.
Excellent. No problem at all. Anybody else have a question?
Well, I do. This is Christian again.
Hey, Christian.
I have a question on two levels. It's the same question, but with two different aspects to it. The first one is, I've been on the phone a lot to get leads to make offers on bank-owned properties.
Uh-huh.
On bank-owned properties, does it make a difference? Is it better? Isn't it better to work with a listing agent as opposed to work with a buying agent?
Well, here's what I tell people, okay? Nathan may have a different opinion, but he's probably going to tell you something similar. When you're first starting out, I would call the listing agent on every property.
Okay.
And you're calling the listing agent for two reasons. Number one, they know more about the property than anybody, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you're calling them because you don't have a buyer's agent. And number two, one of the reasons you're calling them is to see if you can buy the house. But number three, another reason you're calling them is to see if this is an agent you can work with. So occasionally a listing agent you call might become your buyer's agent, okay?
Okay.
They might become your buyer's agent. So when you're starting out, if you don't have a buyer's agent, yes, you do need to call the listing agent on every one.
And also they have a relationship with the asset manager as well, so that could help potentially?
Right, right.
Okay.
Exactly. And they're the listing agent for the property. Nobody knows more about the property than they do.
Okay. Same question for hot properties. I know you talk, and I understand the concept with having a buyer's agent on the 250. So for HUD property, that's where you suggest to work with a buyer's agent.
Uh huh.
Okay.
Yeah, same thing. You could contact the listing agent first, but the listing agent is going to be the one to submit your property. Okay.
Okay.
They're
going to
submit your property, or excuse me, submit your bid. At HUDHomestore.com.
Yeah.
And until you find a good buyer's agent.
Yeah, I've been lucky to talk to a couple of people here where I'm looking at that I believe I'm going to build a strong relationship. My challenge right now is to find deals to make offers on. So I've been on the phone a lot, and ultimately that's what I need to do, get the ball moving so people send me deals to review and bid on.
That's good.
Okay. One quick comment as well. I spoke again because I knew of the phone call regarding that property where there's no title.
Right.
And that's one of the agents that I want to work with because this guy is always looking for a solution. And I said to him, perfect, this is a property that because of that issue, everybody's staying away from. So I said, this is the first property we're going to deal with because this way we're going to solve that situation. So we're working on it. And as soon as I can resolve that, I will let you know and also how that was resolved so that could be some information that could be of value to you and other students who run into the same type of situation.
That sounds good. That's the one you emailed me about.
That is correct.
Yes.
I still do not understand how a house was sold without a title and a mortgage on it. I still don't understand.
Well, yeah, let me just share with everybody that's on here. Christian had emailed me about a house where the realtor said they do not have a title to the house. Well, quite frankly, he said that there was never a title issued to the house. Well, quite frankly, you don't really want a title. It could be that the title was issued. It was just surrendered at the DMV, and now it's considered real property. It's on a permanent foundation, and the title's been surrendered, which is exactly what you want, and the only way to find out is a title search. So whoever the attorney or title company is doing the title search, they will be able to find out. We buy mobile homes all the time that are not HUD houses, and sometimes the title has not been surrendered. So we have to have the attorney fill out the paperwork to surrender the title so it's considered real property as opposed to a mobile home on a lot. Okay? I just wanted to share that with everybody else.
But, according to the bank, there was no title. On the other hand, the bank is in the business of issuing mortgages, but still I'm surprised that they would issue a mortgage without even at least having an idea.
And there's your sign right there. They probably wouldn't have, and you're probably going to find out that the realtor doesn't know what they're talking about, and the title was surrendered, and it's probably not a problem at all.
Okay, cool. I'll check with them and working
good.
On that. So that's
good. Yeah,
good.
Just let me know.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, because this way I know that the second other investors hear about it, they walk away, which is perfect. I'm going to, one way or another, this
that's
is a solution
good.
For me to come to.
Good. Well, cool. Anybody else have a question?
Hey, Larry, this is Garland from Dallas. I got a comment about the Nothing But HUD program. I'm going through it, and it is the most insightful, in-depth, comprehensive program that I've ever bought.
Wow, that's impressive. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it is impressive. It's very impressive. I'm really, really pleasantly surprised and pleased with the information in it.
That's awesome, man. I appreciate you saying that. And you can't beat
the
price either.
No, you cannot. You cannot beat the price. No way.
That's good.
Cool.
I appreciate you saying that. I really do. That means a lot.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I'll go see mommy.
Good. Okay, great. Who else has a question?
Hey, Larry. This is Ryan in Louisiana.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much. How you doing?
I am doing good. Are you in the floodwaters?
No, I'm actually below the floodwaters.
Good.
But, we're making it okay.
That's good.
But the question that I have is I was looking at a property that was listed by HUD. I drove by the property. I looked in the window. They got the letter in there. It says contact this property management, and there was a case number. And I called them, and they gave me the name of a different management company because they don't handle that anymore. And I called the other company. And they said that they couldn't pull anything up in their records. I spoke to a local agent, and they said that the property I was looking at had been sold, but it's still vacant after probably about 2 months or so. No, actually, since at least April, when I've been going by, and it's been vacant that whole time. And I'm trying to figure out how do I find out who owns it, or who do I need to contact about. Why haven't they done anything? Is it vacant? Are they wanting to get rid of it? What was their plan? Because it's still just sitting there not doing anything.
Okay.
And I have people who'd be interested in buying it, and if I could find out who it is.
Sure, sure. Let me back up a little bit, okay? First of all, you called the asset manager that their name was on the paperwork, and they probably told you that they're not handling it anymore because HUD – a few months ago changed all their asset managers, okay? Maybe not all of them, but they changed a lot of their asset managers. So it could be that they were handling that property, but when a new asset manager won the bid for that state to be able to manage those properties, it went to the new asset manager. And either they haven't got it on their books yet, or they have already sold it, one or the other, okay? Now, second thing is, you said, how do you look up and find out who owns it? The only way to do that is go to the courthouse, okay? And you could typically search courthouses, pretty much all of them online. I know you guys are a little bit different there in Louisiana, the way everything's recorded and all that stuff. But you should be able to look stuff up online and find out, number one, where does the tax bill go? And number two, whose name is on the deed? Okay. So those are two places I would look right there. Whose name is on the deed and where does the tax bill go? and that'll tell you who owns it. And if it was sold like in April or sold a couple months ago or whatever, it'll tell you exactly, you know, who bought it, when, from who, and all that good stuff.
Okay. And I just would look it up by the address?
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. You just look it up by
awesome.
The address. And, yeah, but all HUD houses, in other words, the asset, just so you know in the future, the asset, it doesn't really do you any good to call the asset manager because
okay.
all they're going to do is tell you to call the realtor or to go to HUDHomestore.com. Because all HUD houses, if it is owned by HUD, it's going to be listed at HUDHomestore.com when it becomes available. If it's already sold, then you just look up at the Register of Deeds or the Tax Assessor's Office and find out who bought it and who owns it now.
Okay. Yeah, it's not on the HUD site anymore. I looked up by the case number and looked for the address, and it's not there.
Yeah. Well, then maybe it's already sold and closed. Who knows? And but you can look it up at either the Tax Assessor's or the Register of Deeds and find out who owns it.
Okay.
And if it comes up as an LLC that owns it, if it's an investor and it comes up as an LLC, then all you do is go to the Secretary of State and look up the corporations for that state and type in that company name, and it'll tell you the registered agent, who the registered agent is, and it'll tell you the mailing address. And you can do a search for that person's name in that city and see if you can find their phone number. If not, you just send them a postcard.
Okay.
Cool. Does that help?
Awesome. Yes. I appreciate that.
No problem at all. It's what I do. So who else has a question?
Hey, Larry. How you doing?
One.
It's Mark from Rhode Island.
What's happening?
Okay. Do you want to go? Somebody else said hi, too. Do you want me to let them go first?
I don't know. It's up to you guys.
Okay. Well, I'll go first. That's fine. Sorry. So, hey, Lauren, how you doing? Been on the fence for a while, like saving up money and saving up cash, and I have probably about $40,000 saved up now, plus I have an apartment building that I've had for 5 years that I probably have about $300,000 in equity in. And just on the fence, I do a lot of research before I jump, and I've talked to you a few times, just trying to think about what my best next move is. My biggest concern is that, you know, even with the owner finance, you know, you have a 20-year window where you're going to, you know, have income. And I really want something that's going to provide income beyond the 20 years, even trying to look beyond that time frame. And so kind of thinking about what the best course of action would be. I think you had mentioned, you know, hard money at some point. Just trying to get your advice, I know how successful you've been. I think you've done some commercial, properties as well. And so just trying to feel out what you think it'd be for like a lifetime residual income kind of choice.
Okay. So you have 300,000 equity in a multi-unit. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay. And is that equity that you're going to cash out, or how are you going to get that money to use?
I'm kind of looking for your advice. I mean, you know, it's tenants. So it's, you know, I have it's a 9-unit, and, you know, tenants, you know how that goes. You know, we talk about that a lot. You know, I hear you talk about that a lot when I've been to your seminars, you know. And, it has its ups and downs as anything else does. But this does cash flow. I mean, I probably cash flow $3,000 a month on the property.
So you're making $3,000 a month net cash flow?
Yes.
Okay. And so that's $36,000 a year, right?
Right.
Okay. And you have about $300,000 in equity, right?
Right.
Okay.
So the market's hot. Yeah.
Yeah, so you're getting a little bit better than 10% return on your money, right?
Yep. And when I bought the property,
about
I put down $80,000.
Return on your money, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So here's the thing. You should not consider selling it or whatever or cashing out your equity unless you can get a better return than 12%. Equity doesn't mean anything until you can convert it to cash or cash
right.
flow. Now, here's what. Do you own that
right.
building free and clear?
No.
Okay. Well, what? There's a couple of things you could do. You could go out and refinance it or pull out some equity out of the property and use that for either hard money lending or to buy other properties and use the money, or you could just sell it outright. Or you could do a 1031 tax-deferred exchange and sell it. Okay.
Right.
You're going to have to.
Which is kind of what I'm thinking. Yeah, because, I mean, the 1031 was kind of where my head was because I'm figuring if I have all this equity, if I have all this extra cash in this property that's not realized, because what happened is the market's hot up here right now. And so, you know, properties have become, especially in the Northeast, have become, you know, worth more than they were even a couple of years ago. Is it smart for me to cash that money out, invest in a different part of the country where I can get a, you know, maybe $1 million building with, you know, 30% down, and then, you know, have a much better, you know, return on my cash even from that point?
How much time are you looking to put into your business?
Not much. That's another thing too, is, you know, I kind of have that mentality where, you know, I'm such a serious believer in residual income. And I'm a big believer in, you know, trying to be low maintenance on the time. I have as much time actually as I need to because I've built this residual income. And so because, you know, this isn't my only residual business, because I have this residual income, you know, I've kind of become accustomed to being completely free for the most part and take my kids on vacation whenever I want. I'm home all the time. And it's not that we don't work hard still. It's not that we're not willing to work hard. It's just that, because I've seen the other side of it, I want to have that residual income, that long-term,
right.
you know, freedom. That, you know what I mean?
Good, good. Good for you. That's awesome. That's awesome. So here's what I would do then if I were you, okay? And by the way,
mm-hmm.
how much do you have in that building? In other words,
you
sold it,
how much
cashed out the $300, or are you going to have a big tax bill?
Yeah, I'm sure, because I bought the building for, you know, 425. It's a, you know, the cap rate on it is way beyond, you know, because its revenue is about 100K a year. So, you know, the cap rate's much higher than what it's even, you know, I'm just guessing what it's worth. I'm guessing it's worth $750 based on other sales I've seen in the area.
Okay,
based
so
on
here's,
comps.
Here's what you should do, okay? This is my mm-hmm. opinion. If based on what you've told me, here's what I would do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just based on what you told me, all right? I would do a 1031 on that building, all right? I would do a 1031 on that building. I would sell it, cash out the $300, use a 1031 intermediary, and then within, I think they give you 90 days, I believe it is, to identify a replacement.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's 60, I can't remember. But
I think it's
90. I would identify another property, whether it be multifamily or office or strip center, or even a something like a self-storage, or even a triple net lease. If you really want hands-off, buy a triple net lease property, okay, if you really want hands-off, all right? A triple
right.
net lease is like a Dollar General, a CVS, a Family Dollar, you know, those sort of, you know, those kind of tenant-occupied buildings. And what triple net lease means
right.
is the tenant pays the taxes, the insurance, and the repairs, okay? It's
right.
true where the tenant pays everything, all right? So
right.
if I were you, that's what I would do on the building is I would sell it and then identify several. You can identify like up to three, and then you have to close on one. And
right.
And then, you know, I would just cash out, take that $300 and let it be 25 or 30% down on the next thing and buy $1 million property, you know, and then you're going to have about twice the amount of money coming in per month that you have now.
Right. Yeah, that's what I figured. Now, do you like any specific triple net lease? And do you have where do you go look for that, like LoopNet or one of those, you know, big companies?
Best,
or
LoopNet is your absolute best place. And if you got a little bit of time, you wanna sit on LoopNet and look for properties that are mispriced. In other words, it might say it's a 6 cap, but maybe they mispriced it and it's really an 8 cap.
Right.
And it happens all the time, believe it or not.
Right, right.
So, but
and,
I'm like,
do you like
one
a specific
of my favorites
of the country,
are Dollar Generals and Family Dollars.
So do you go out, do you call, how do you find, just on LoopNet you find them?
They're
you look for Family
LoopNet.
General on LoopNet? Or?
Yeah, yeah, they're just on LoopNet, and you can pick up a Dollar General for, you might even, if you've got $300,000 in equity, you might even be able to pick up two or three Dollar Generals and put, you know, maybe $100 down on each of them. You know, maybe
find
three of them that are, you know, that are $400,000, and you're putting $100,000 down on each one of them.
And do you like a specific part of the country for that, or do you like just anywhere? Kind of,
I've owned them in multiple states, in the Carolinas, in Alabama, in Georgia. So, yeah, I like Dollar Generals.
Okay. And then do you get financing for the rest of it? Like, do you offer $100,000 for the lease itself, or do you offer $100,000 and put $100,000 down, and then they finance it back to you, or you finance it through a mortgage company,
you're gonna
or not?
You're going to get a bank loan.
Okay.
You're going to get a bank loan. You know, whoever's selling it to you will probably, you know, they're all listed with an agent, and they typically have lenders in place. But you can also, you know, bring your own lender if you like. The 9-unit you have now, is it financed
yep.
with the bank?
It's personal. They self-finance. I finance through the owners.
Oh, okay. Well, here's the other thing you need to do too. Okay, when you're talking to the owners, you need to ask them for a discount to pay them off.
Okay, interesting.
Like if you owe them whatever you owe, how much do you owe them?
$150, $175?
No, I'm sorry.
No.
400 and something?
Yeah, so no, I put 80 down. So I own about 325 at this point.
You own 325?
Yeah,
yep. So they'll take 250 if you pay them off in the next, you know, 3 months or 6 months.
Got it. I didn't even consider that. Well, it was a 7-year note. We're probably 5 years into a 7-year note, so they might not want it. But they're very, I mean, they're elderly. They're probably in their late 80s at this point, so they might just want to take the main one. So you might be right about that,
they're,
too.
They're late 80s? Okay, so
they're
taking
yep.
the installment sale, so they don't have to pay taxes on it. So if you tell them you're getting ready to pay them off, you ask them for a discount, they might say, forget about it. I'm going to have to pay taxes on the money anyway. The only reason I sell or finance is so I wouldn't have to pay taxes. Then here's what you can say.
Right.
Say, okay, I'll tell you what. I'll keep the loan if you reduce the interest rate.
Right.
And then you sell it to somebody else with an assumable loan.
Got it. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
All right, Larry. Hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate you helping me out.
You're very welcome, man. That's a good little deal you got going on there. That's good. I'm glad I was able to help you.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Anybody else have a question?
Hey, buddy. I don't know about everybody else. I'm just kind of sitting here trying to soak up all this information.
A lot of stuff going on, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's good. It's all good, though. It's good stuff. People got stuff going on.
It is, yeah.
That's good. That's good.
So I'm trying to get an offer together for a house. It needs a little bit of work, but not a terrible lot.
Uh-huh.
And the property, it's on 8.5 acres.
Uh-huh.
It's a double wide, 1994, but that's not the end of the world. It's in pretty good shape.
Well, good. And how much are they asking for it?
They are asking $129,500.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
Well, for this, it's in this area, so in the Pacific Northwest.
Uh huh.
So that's what the property's worth.
Uh huh.
So I don't know. I'm gonna try to offer 70 and see if they bite.
Well, good.
Because I have a pretty good idea, I could turn around and sell it easily for 100, 115.
Yeah.
Seller financing.
And you're gonna offer them how much?
70.
Okay. Okay. Well, make sure you run your numbers, and you know you can cash out your note and still make some money. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Good. Good. And you got to get out there and make some offers.
I know. I got my toe right there above the water.
Yeah. Well, you're gonna have to dip it in.
I know. Cause I don't want you to take me to task like you did Adam tonight.
That's good.
So, hey Vicki, are you still on the call?
Yeah, some people have already hung up.
Oh, maybe she left.
Oh, maybe so.
I know she got on.
Yeah. Anybody else have any questions? You guys have had some really good questions tonight. You guys got some really good deals going on.
Not enough to my taste. But anyway, the good news is I'm working on it, and the way I look at it is right now is the, it's like everything else. It takes the main effort is at the beginning to get the ball rolling. After that, the momentum goes. And
that's
so
right.
I'm on the phone every day. I spoke to maybe 10 real estate agents today.
Good for
and,
you.
That's what I'm doing because if I keep trying to look at deals on my own, it's not the right way. You know, as you mentioned and as Adam confirmed, said, just talk to a real estate agent. They know the local market. What you see on the – by the way, those websites, the Internet is nice, but it's also a little bit of a double-edged sword because if you rely too much on the information, especially when you don't have experience, it can be very misleading very quickly.
Right.
And realtors themselves told me, they said, you know, be careful of what you see. It's either inaccurate or and the main concern, the main difficulty, but I resolve that, I think, by it's when you look at comps on the Internet, it's very, very misleading. You literally see some comps that have a swing of 50% between one, not comps, I mean appraisal value. You know, you can
right.
see a difference of 50% between two sites that are supposedly reliable. So I don't really look at comps now much, but realtors can tell you, you know, to the dime or to the penny what a property is worth, and that's really
right.
the real appraisal, I guess, or property value that you can trust.
Exactly.
But still, it would feel good sometime to, you know, there's some properties I look a little bit if I could get a quick way to go to at least have an order of magnitude. I understand it can swing, but I don't know if you have a site that over time you say, hey, those guys within 10%, within 15%, they are reliable consistently, but some of the sites, they are, you know, they seem to be on target for some property and completely off on some other properties.
Well, a realtor that's familiar with the market and the price range that you're looking at is the best source.
Okay.
Because they have their boots on the ground. They know what's going on.
Yeah, okay. Well, I gave the criteria to everybody, what I'm looking for. Where was I calling today? I was calling, and they say, you know, they say, we're in a city here. You're not going to find anything for $75,000 or less. She said, if you want to buy some property, you start to look at $150,000
plus. Right.
And I said, okay, I'll call you back in 3 months, or, you know, I didn't say that to her, but I said I'll look into that specific market in 3 months. Do you operate a little bit outside of the main city to get my feet wet and to deal with? And there's also a lot of competition in the larger type of metropolitan area because everybody seems to be chasing the big, big deal and don't seem to be too attractive to the small deal, which is good.
Right. Well, good. Well, you're on your way.
Well, yeah, but as you know, you met me a couple of weeks ago. I'm not very patient, so I want things to happen maybe quicker than what.
Well, you just keep talking
right
to
now,
10 people a day, and you should be all right.
Yeah, I'll keep
good.
Doing it. I don't mind on being on the phone.
Good. Does anybody else have a question? Well, you guys have had a lot of good questions tonight. A lot of people got a lot of stuff going on. Anybody else have a question tonight? Going once.
Sounds like you picked up a cold, Larry.
Do what?
Sounds like you picked up a cold.
Oh, no, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. I do have allergies, though.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, but no, I'm fine. Thank you very much for asking, though.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Anybody else have a question tonight? Now, remember, guys, you can always email me in between this. Send the email to larry@larrygoins.com and put Inner Circle in the subject line, and I'll be more than happy to answer any questions that you may have. So,
well, Larry, this is Charlie. We have a question.
Sure.
Charlie and Sarah in San Antonio. We actually found a deal as a finder instead of getting it actually on the contract. And then we were going to get a finder's fee from an investor,
right?
Who said he had the money, but it was never wired to the title company. So how do we protect ourselves? Do we ask the private investor for proof of funds?
So how do you protect yourself in one sense, to make sure that the investor pays you, or to make sure that they have the money, or what?
Yeah, they show up at closing and close. If you know, we have relationships with the title company and the small town, you know, where we're dealing, and that deals with our name and reputation. So, I mean, we've never asked for proof of funds from an investor before.
Right.
So now this thing may not close, and it has not closed, and that was last Friday.
So you're saying
your investor
may not have the money to close, and you basically bird dogged the deal and put their name on the contract?
Yeah.
Okay. So their name's on the contract. So, you know, unfortunately, you don't have a legal obligation for the contract. They do. But
exactly.
But you're the one that dealt with the seller, I'm assuming, and that's what your reputation and your and with the title company, you want to make sure that they know you're real.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah, that could be a little sticky when you're bird dogging a deal like that. Yeah, are you buying the property, or is the seller an individual?
Yes.
Okay. Well, in the future, what I would do is I would get the property under contract in your company name, but include the words and or assigns, and then you can assign the company or the property to another company. And then if they don't close, you just cancel that and assign it to someone else, and you have some backups lined up. But the way it's been structured, you're not even in the deal anymore. It's kind of a handshake that your buyer is
that on purpose, actually, because we were trying to help someone else we know out on their first deal, and then that's the way it went, and we intentionally stayed out of it.
Okay.
But I understand.
Well, if they don't close, if you think it's a good deal and you can find somebody else, then you say, look, you're not able to close on the property. I'm going to go ahead and get the property under contract myself.
Right, and I was wondering how many days I should give them.
When does their contract expire?
I think it was last Friday.
Well, as far as I know, they don't have a contract anymore. It expired.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So I'm saying I didn't see that contract. All I know is
Well, if you know the seller and you're the one that talked to the seller, I would.
Well, I did not.
Okay. You just basically gave the seller's name and number to the person who has the property under contract, right?
Yeah, pretty much that.
Okay. And do you know the seller yourself?
No, I do not.
Okay, you were trying to help out the investor buyer to do their first deal, right?
There you go.
Okay.
Not their first deal, but a deal. My mistake.
Have you talked to them to find out if they're going to close or if their contract's expired?
They went silent. We got a text message today. Now they're still trying to work it out. They say they need a survey, so they didn't have the cash. They're trying to get funds. And initially on the front end of the deal, I told them it's an old deal. Someone's going to ask for a survey if you're not coming up with cash. But I tried to stay out of the deal just to see how it would go, basically.
Right.
So
So no loss for me. I just, unless the reputation is an issue, and I don't think it's mine. I think it's the person I gave it to is the one that's going to have the issue maybe.
Yeah, I don't see if your name's not on anything and you've billed out of the deal, I don't really see how it affects you at all, unless you're just concerned about losing your bird dog fee.
No, I'm not concerned about that. I just want to know, should I ever ask private investors if they have proof of funds, or probably not, right?
I would always ask, where's the money coming from?
Okay, well, basically they lied. They said they had it, and apparently they were trying to fund it. Maybe that's it.
That's what a lot of people do. They get involved in these daisy chain deals where they're going to get it from you and find somebody to get it from them, or they got a third-party lender involved, and it could get really crazy. So, ask for a proof of funds letter that's not a transactional funding lender.
Okay, well, I think that's where our government is starting to crack down on some of these people from what I heard. Do you know about that?
In Texas?
Like nationally, I heard they're going into some seminars and kind of mystery shopping some of these trainers.
To do what?
And this wasn't a lawyer with the National RIA that said this was going on. Basically, they're making sure, they're looking for those Ponzi schemes, those people who are saying they're doing one thing and doing another and lying and impacting consumers that are sellers and saying they have equitable interest and they don't.
Yeah.
Because that's happening a lot here in San Antonio, I can tell you.
Uh-huh. I believe it. And this was who? Somebody for National RIA that said this?
Yeah, let me think his name.
A lawyer.
It's the legal counsel to the National RIA. I can't recall his name right now.
Oh.
He was teaching. Basically, people putting things on Craigslist when they don't have...
what they're doing is they're going to get somebody to agree to sell their house, and then they advertise that house on Craigslist. And they're
basically being
a broker without a license, probably.
Yes, and that's exactly what they're going after. I actually had a realtor send me a deal not that long ago saying they had it, and I checked MLS, and it was an active option, but it was being marketed as his deal here in San Antonio, and he was doing that.
That's crazy.
Not even on the deal. I called the broker, and he's like, oh, no, there's no offers on this deal. I just about cut loose and turned him into MLS, but I got better things to do.
Yeah, really. You don't want to get involved in all that hassle. Wow.
So,
next time just get down the contract in your name and assign the contract.
Right, but even if I would have done that, then, and I tried to assign it to this other person that didn't show up with money because he's a liar, I would still, then my reputation really would have been.
Well, but that's the reason you have two backups lined up.
Okay, that's cool. That's what I'm saying. I need a backup tomorrow. This kind of blindsided me, but don't worry, Nathan's on it.
There you go. Well, that's good. Yeah, he's awesome.
Great information tonight, by the way.
Good. I hope that helped.
It did. I do have one more question now that we're talking about this property.
Sure.
It is a historical property. I don't know, as an appraiser valuing something like that, it's just an original schoolhouse, almost a national thing, historical property. And at any time you're doing that, I know there's a real long hold time. I've only done a couple, but do you have an average on the time it takes to get through some of that?
Through some of what specifically?
The historical approvals and stuff. It depends on the city and the county or whatever, right?
Are you saying that you want to get it listed on the National Historic Registry?
It's already listed in the county as like the original schoolhouse of a county with the stories, okay?
Right, but
and that
I'm not
be
sure
marketing.
Exactly what you're asking me.
I guess the question is, do you have any experts that know about historical renovation and that type of property to get max value if I did end up purchasing it?
Well, first thing you should do is talk to a couple of realtors and ask them, number one, what is the highest and best use of that property? It could be the highest and best use is residential. It could be it's commercial, office, you know, bed and breakfast. You know, I would find out what's the highest and best use. Use those terms. That's a real estate term. So ask them what is the highest and best use. Then you want to find out the zoning and find out if it's in a historic district. And then you're going to have to talk to the city / county and find out if you rehab it, what kind of special permits do you need, or also what can you do and what can you not do, and what do you have to have approval for. Like, for example, if it's a historic house, you may not be able to put vinyl siding on the house. You may have to go back with wood siding on the house, for example.
Right. Well, I've done them before. That's a great explanation, and there was actually a lot of time and due diligence up front on that property doing all of that. That's why now it's kind of like, dang, I just want to go and get it because we've done so much, you know, preliminary research, et cetera.
Right. Well, good. Well, maybe it's one you want to jump in and do something with. But yeah, I would get it under contract under your name this time.
There you go.
For your LLC. Yep. Yeah.
Got it.
Good. I hope that helped.
Thank you, Larry.
Right. You're very welcome. My pleasure. Anybody else have a question? Really good conversations and questions tonight. Anybody else before we go? All right, guys, just remember that I'm here if you need me. I really appreciate it. You guys got a lot of stuff going on. It's awesome. I love hearing those success stories. Be sure and join our Facebook group if you're not already. Request to join our Inner Circle Facebook group. Just look up Facebook under groups, Larry Goins Inner Circle members, and that way we can all encourage each other and help with each other and all that good stuff. And
okay.
I also have a Larry Goins student group. And remember, you can shoot me an email with Inner Circle in the subject line anytime. And if we need to get on the phone about a deal or anything in between these calls, I'm here to help you. And we appreciate your business and confidence in us. And let us know if you need any help with anything. And with that, thanks a lot, guys. I hope you guys have a great night.
All right. Thanks
a lot,
Larry.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Larry.
Bye.